everyone. Welcome to Cloud Tech Talks by Amadeus. Very happy to get back to hosting my favorite Cloud Talks with my good friend, Mr. Vishal Chandnani. I have known him for fairly good number of years. I've seen with amazing ability he has done large programs in IT. And I thought for the Amadeus Tech Talk audience, it will be an exactly right time for me to have a conversation with him, understand what he did, and how it can help for the future generation of IT folks to listen to our podcast. So with that intro, thanks everyone. Vishal, I'm glad I'm having you today. How are you doing?
Good morning, Madhu. Joy to be here today. Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited for our first conversation online.
Online, wonderful. So even though I said a brief about you, I would like you to expand on your credentials, you know, your discussions to the our viewers. And from there, I'll start, you know, conversing with some questions. We can make it as a conversation of various topics over a period of time. So all to you, Vishal. Why don't you educate our audience?
Sounds great, Madhu. Thanks again for having me. Good morning, everyone. A little bit about me. I started my journey at Lucent Technologies, where I developed software for wireless communication systems. And I take a lot of pride knowing that every time a cell phone user hits the send button, it's basically triggering my call processing software. And that work led to two patents in the first 6 months. My next chapter at Boeing fulfilled my dream as a teenager and was my first career pivot to defense, space, and security in the US government. At DeathMethod, I built web and mobile applications for several New York-based startups and basically fulfilled other people's hopes and dreams. My foray into finance came at IEX, where I was recruited as the head of engineering for a new business called Astral, a data platform built in collaboration with the world's largest asset managers. At Prudential, I stepped into the world of insurance and retirement securities, directed global teams of 80-plus engineers, and managed multi-million dollar budgets while driving efficiency and digital innovation. Back to you, Madhu.
Excellent, excellent. Man, I was thinking, you know, when are you going to stop? It is an excellent thing. And Vishal, as I mentioned to you when I met you a couple of years back, in fact, when I met you, spoke about your defense systems, and one thing which stood out was your patent you got in the early careers of your engineering. Fantastic. I said that is, as you know, I had my start in nuclear science. Those time are definitely memorable. Wonderful. Thank With you. That, you know, for the audience today, Vishal and I will be talking about broad topics. We have put it into three or four buckets. The first area I thought I want to really look at his experiences, and it will be beneficial to all of you who is listening to this, will be the way the general landscape of technology changed. When we finish that, at that point in time, I'll probably jump into this whole computing world where it's becoming on-prem enterprises or cloud. Then after that, we will briefly talk about the way the engineering is happening today. You heard Vishal's varied experiences. And then at last, we will definitely touch the most wanted topic, artificial intelligence, you know. And I'm excited to hear what Vishal has in his mind when we come to that topic. Okay. With that, Vishal, you know, I thought, I know you talked about your experiences. Why don't we recap how the last, maybe, you know, not too far, but around 10, 15, 20 odd years, the characteristics of large enterprise technology. You know, you had worked in government, you worked in commercials, and now you're with, you know, insurance firms. So how the technology landscape has evolved, and has it changed? How is it? Why don't we start with that?
Sounds great, Madhu. What a great way to kick off the conversation this morning. Looking back, let's go back 15 years, 2010. I was just wrapping up at Alcatel-Lucent, where our prime focus was wireless communication systems, right? At the time, it was primarily physical hardware with embedded software for real-time communication systems. Our tech stack was C, C++, running in a Unix environment on top of VxWorks. And at the time, we compiled our code and installed executable files on the target hardware. You know, there was limited automated testing, right? And really, from a customer perspective, our focus was high call completion rates, low call drops, and zero defects. So this was about 15 years ago. If I fast forward to 2015, that puts us at the 10-year mark. Looking back, we still had a majority of our hardware at Boeing was on-prem. We called them stacks. And, you know, basically they were the size of a fridge you would see at an appliance store these days, right? You can go to Best Buy, look at one of those fridges. That was a stack for us. And they typically had what we called hosts, called firewall, user interface 0, user interface 1, et cetera, based on their purpose. And at the time, our focus was in the U.S. government, the intelligence community. You know, I had top secret security clearance, so I can't say much here without getting into trouble. But at a high level, the focus was to improve the analyst efficiency. And we had started to explore cloud technologies, and that's where I began my AWS learning journey. Fast forward to today, you know, 2024, 25 at Prudential, soon after I joined, which was just before the pandemic. Again, a whole different story for a whole different episode. The company had started moving towards the cloud, and I had started leading several initiatives to migrate my team's applications from on-prem data centers to the cloud, mostly AWS with some Microsoft Azure exposure as well. And again, the focus was application performance, reliability, security, scalability, all those good metrics. From a reliability perspective, you know, we measure things like recovery point objective, RPO, and recovery time objectives, RTO. And for a customer-facing product, important metrics are what we call Net Promoter Score, NPS, and the ease of doing business, EODB. So as you can see, over the last 15 years, we've come a long way from physical hardware only to a physical hardware evolving to the cloud, which is now known as hybrid, and then more recently, pure cloud ecosystem.
Excellent. I like that when you said, you know, the customer platforms, NPS, and ease of doing business. Fantastic way of bringing IT to the forefront of the business. You know, you watch your customers, you do that. Fantastic. And when you were talking, Vishal, I was thinking, you know, I don't want to use the word misconception, but if I use it for the sake of discussions, what do you think, was there a misconception on technology over the last period of time, and have we got over it? And if we have got over it, what is that one misconception you may think, you know, for the audience?
Yeah. Interesting perspective. And I'm going to honestly admit that in this case, my answer is not a technology perspective. It's more from a non-technology, but also a career shift perspective. So let's go back again. You say a decade ago. And by the way, I love these markers that you have, like a decade ago or 15 years ago, because it really forces me to go back and gives me a timeline on where I was at that time. So that's very helpful in your questions. Just some good feedback for you. So 2015, I was at Boeing. You know, we were part of defense, space, and security. That was the business unit. And generally speaking, Madhu, most of us love our jobs when things are going well, right? You know, in my career, I've often felt that sweet spot when our jobs were secure. Pun intended, I worked in security. And as an example, Ruby, Rails, JavaScript developers with top secret clearance will always have a job in the community, is one of those things that I used to think of. However, with time, I've come to believe that no job is perfect and no job is forever. You know, nothing that goes well today will stay well forever. There's bound to be ups and downs. And more, I'm seeing people, myself included, accept that change and pivot their careers to do what's best for them at that time. Now, notice that last line is a little open-ended because it's not just that perfect software engineering job. I think the ability to accept change and pivot your career to do what's right for you at that time, I think is key. I think that's what we are replacing, and that's what we've come to believe at this time.
Excellent. I love it because the young audience or the, you know, this podcast, our Amadeus Tech Talks, is viewed by a lot of people. You know, our viewership has increased recently very much. And I know the reason for it. You know, your wisdom, the way you're putting up the misconceptions, or your non-technical view of how people have to adapt to change. Brilliant, Vishal.
Thank you.
Now, with that, you know, there were one before I jump to the next world, you know, where you led to the cloud. I just wanted to ask you, you know, if I relook at it, is there any patterns of change you looked at for the last 20 years, you know, right from your early days in career to leadership to strategy to helping, you know, large insurance firms like Prudential, you know, make a change. So is there anything which catches your eyes and say, hey, these are the way the cycles or the patterns happen in the technology landscape? You know?
Sure,
is it something you want to share with the audience?
Happy to. Actually, that's a loaded question. I'm going to have to contain some of that excitement I have here. But if I were to try to kind of summarize it in the snippet that I have in my brain right now, leadership changes. You know, in my view, most, if not all, technology choices or decisions are made by senior leaders. And in my career, I've seen my fair share of shiny new toys that really didn't stay cool enough for long and ended up in the junkyard, you know, with all due respect. And with time, over, you know, the past 25, 26 years, I feel like the best decisions made, and I'll caveat that by saying for a particular time, are usually those that involve discussions not just with senior leaders, but also stakeholders from cross-functional product, technology, and business teams. I call it the triangle of trust. I'm actually drawing it in my hand now, where product, technology, and business coming together are more likely to make sound decisions for the organization.
Very well said. You know, I love the word, the triangle of trust. I think I've not read it in any books, but Vishal, you should keep talking about it. Because I've always thought that technology teams are enabling business to work, you know. So that way, you bringing in, talking about product, technology, and business teams together, it's fantastic. Love that. But I also like this shiny new toys, you know. We will touch a little bit of new toys in the later part of the podcast.
Right.
I like that. Okay. You want to name any of the technologies which were shiny, didn't survive? Any terms comes up to your mind? I don't want to put you on spot, but if you don't have to.
Nothing comes to mind. Maybe for a future episode.
I can give one word, the big data.
You know, oh, right. Believe.
You know, I think that term was overused. Then, of course, you know, I hope the audience doesn't take me negative for that. But blockchain technology, it was shiny. I hope the blockchains and multi-ledgers pick up. But big data was overkill. Anyway.
Right. No, that's a good point.
Wonderful. So for the audience, I thought we will jump to the next best world, which is the last 5-10 years, which is very core in your memory, what you did for Prudential. You know, you went through the cycle of early adoption, then accelerated cloud adoption, and now default cloud. You know, I hope. You know, not that Amadeus is a cloud engineering firm. I'm trying to say that it's default, but looks like cloud is everywhere. That means the enterprises have really related to running workloads not on-prem. They are ready to run workloads secured everywhere. So, what do you think about this thing? You know, anywhere you want to, you're a great person of analogy. Would you want to look at something, you know, how this cloud adoption is happening? Have any thoughts on that?
I think that it's worth talking about some of the early days of cloud adoption, what were some of the primary drivers and what we've seen happen today. Maybe I can take the steer the conversation there,
Yep.
and then we can talk about a little bit more about sort of where we're headed, right, in the
Perfect.
on-prem versus cloud, right? I actually like this topic because it takes me back to 2015. And we had at the time the common joke at Boeing was, there's this t-shirt, Madhu, you've probably seen it in your business. It's not the cloud, it's someone else's computer. You remember that one?
Absolutely
And
love it. Yep.
right.
Yep. I
And
remember. I remember.
so while some technologies were saying, oh, it's the cloud, that's where we gotta go, I think deep inside the IT folks, like you and I, knew that it's really someone else's, system, right? So I'd like to touch on some of the fears at the time, some of the drivers, and then let's see where the conversation goes. In my mind, I had started to see a lot of fear or hesitation where folks felt like, they were losing control of their on-prem data. There's this innate that, oh, this is my hardware, I want my data to sit there, that's it, right? And the second concern, which I think is a little more valid, was, why do we need to pay to retrieve data that's really ours, right? We put all this data on the cloud and then now we're paying to retrieve it. So that's one of those are some of the fears that come to mind. From a driver perspective, or why we went to cloud, like all businesses, cost reductions was big. And now, knowing then what I know now, if we look at hindsight is always 20/20, as we say, the fears were not really valid. Because on-prem systems were just as prone to security risks, right? As long as you have the internet, as long as you have bad actors, you are still at risk. But the drivers were really valid. Because with time, one can significantly lower costs by not just deploying applications quickly, but also scaling and not wasting cost when your hardware is idle. I think that's one of the best things I like about cloud, is kind of the ability to get resources on demand. You can get cloud storage, compute resources, and use them effectively. And if all else fails, or if I didn't get my cost calculation correct, there's always Cloud Caddy to the rescue, right?
Thank you, Vishal.
So a little segue right back to you, Madhu.
Yep, thank you, sir. I think I like the way you put it. The things where in an on-prem it was a constrained environment. I think cloud by hyperscalers provide an unconstrained environment for engineering teams. The engineering teams which uses it prudently emerge as winners. If the engineering team doesn't use this unconstrained environment prudently, then you have a little bit of financial loss. So I think it's a very valid way of putting it out. I think the fears are out. The platform guys or hyperscalers are investing heavily to make customers happy about, customers being comfortable about putting workloads on cloud. Love that. Love that.
Right.
Now, so, if that is the case, do you foresee customers looking at hybrid cloud models or all the way into cloud? There is a little bit of room, messages and everything you would have seen in the last couple of years, cloud repatriation, So what's your view there? I don't want to term it as what's next after cloud, but are we in the beginning of a shift? That everybody likes cloud, but there is a caution. Will the word of but stays with everybody?
I think that's a good segue, and I like where the conversation is headed.
Yeah.
Just thinking out loud, I think it's a two-part answer, right? You asked about what's next after cloud, and you touched on a little bit about the hybrid models. So maybe I'll speak on both fronts, and then you can guide the conversation. Thinking back again, some for our listeners, just a quick recap. We talked about, potential next steps after cloud. Are we headed towards edge computing, which I'll talk about in a second? Are we looking at decentralized models, right? But I do want to give a recap for those new to the terms. The cloud environment is basically considered centralized, right? It's a large central processing hub of machines. And edge computing is like having smaller processing centers closer to the source of the data. When we talk about decentralized computing, it's basically a network of distributed nodes where each node kind of contributes to the overall computation. So wanted to get that kind of nomenclature out of the way for our listeners today. And if we think about what's next, in my view, the cloud is definitely here to stay, and we'll see more ways to build applications with lower costs. As an example, today AWS has several AI services and new ways to monitor cloud costs. I think it's a matter of balancing your costs with using new services appropriately for your needs. And as technology leaders, we need to be mindful. I'm going to go back to that shiny new toy. We need to be mindful of chasing what's new and stay focused on the core business problem. So that is sort of my view of where we are headed or what is next after cloud. I'm going to
I
pause
love that.
there to get your thoughts, and then we can talk a little bit about hybrid, Madhu.
No, I fully agree with you. I think it's you alluded to a very good place where we should be asking questions today, and whenever we decide, more questions so that you get answers and make the right decision. Don't jump into something very quickly. So in that one, because you put up this mindful word, I'm going to ask you, what should be, is hybrid the end state or is it a stepping stone? What questions you will ask to answer this point?
Right. I'm going to actually answer it with more questions. And I took out the word hybrid because, Madhu, you've asked a more broader question. As technology leaders, we should take a step back and ask some fundamental questions. So it's not you asked if is hybrid the end state or is it stepping? I'm like, take out the word hybrid for a minute. Hit the pause button, something we need to all as humans need to do more of. Press the pause button, look back and ask the question, what is the problem? What are we trying to solve? And that's going to involve some back and forth, right? And then once you have the answers to those, then talk about, okay, does a hybrid model solve our problem? And again, you'll see me talking in binary here, Madhu. Does the hybrid model solve our problem? If yes, how exactly? If not, what's the best way to get to the ultimate solution? So I've sort of answered your broad question with a series of more questions that will lead us to the solution. And actually, hybrid doesn't even come to play until much later.
I
Back to
agree
you.
with you. Wonderful, wonderful. With this, I because we touched all these for the last 10 minutes, we were telling the audience how nice the cloud world is. But as you and I know, Vishal, when you look at the reality, still the industry has I call it as mainframes from IBM or HP, or there are big monolithic, large compute systems still solving world's either problems in energy or airlines, or you think of even when you do a small bank transaction, still the entire world and companies are looking at certain things are going through mainframes. I remember you said in the beginning of the call, when somebody's making a phone call and making two clicks, you are excited to see your patent is being applied. That if you look today, while cloud computing has taken 30-40% of the global marketplace, and they may go across 50% by all these Gartner's and Forrester's metrics are all out there. But still, there is a majority of workloads on mainframes. So if we touch back, because you've seen all these in your career, where do you think, Vishal, this if I want to use the word legacy, these days legacy mean nothing, 1 year old is becoming legacy, but for the purpose of this conversation, if I ask you that, I mean legacy by mainframe, monolithic, large systems. How do they The companies have to maintain it, but think of the future. So leaders like you, when you are involved in that decision making, like the way you ask questions, where is your head on? You know, will this large legacy monolithic survive for a little longer period, or is there a timeline to it? What do you think? And I'm not definitely asking a what I call a putting you on a spot end timeline question, but what do you think?
Right. Actually, as you were talking, Madhu, your answer, I think two points come to mind. One is we'll talk a little bit about where legacy systems are now. Mm-hmm. And then there's also a little bit of talking about where the future lies. So I'll sort of answer it in two ways.
Yep.
One, you know, back at Lucent and then even early Boeing days, I learned the idea of a forward-looking team, where the idea is to basically be two steps ahead, you know, be it technology or even process change. And when we're all faced by this pressure to innovate, I think we need to take a chill pill, you know, something my kids tell me sometimes, mm-hmm. and use more proof of concept projects or modern day agile spikes before really jumping in into full scale implementation. And in my mind, you know, with time and whenever possible, this forward-thinking concept needs to be ingrained into core development teams in their day-to-day activities. So I jumped a little bit ahead to talk about innovation, and now I'll bring us back to legacy systems. You know, it's actually, we're going into a territory where 20 or 30 years ago, what we now call legacy today, Madhu, you know, 30 years ago, these big databases or these big computing warehouses or IBM mainframes, they were state of the art once upon a time, right? So I think we need to, with all due respect, understand that if things are working well, you know, in IT we say, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. If these things are working well and they're serving their needs, let them be. That is my immediate reaction to legacy and respect for legacy, but also have an open mind and be forward-looking in your approach. So I think it's a balancing act. Life is full of trade-offs.
Yep.
And in some cases, it's possible that these systems are fine and the operational costs are acceptable. You know, we let them be. But I've seen in more of my recent experience at Prudential, some of the legacy systems are expensive to maintain and upgrade. And with time, with help of a forward-thinking mentality, we need to be able to modernize. And I'll end my answer with, as you build new applications, learn to shut down the old.
Good point. Very good point. Very good point. I think maintaining is great, but at times you have to let go certain things which was fantastic earlier, you know, so that you try with the new topics. And before I close it, you know, something when you were talking, Vishal, came to my mind is the institutions of modern technology education play a big role in this. You know, certain technologies, certain legacy things you referred about, you know, C, you know, microprocessor life, as well as in C++. The institutions of today, not many are still teaching fundamental engineering because the usage is less. So there is an element of legacy cost of maintaining will continue to be higher because the young talents may not like to work in those. So there is a talent of something called, hey, the knowledge is getting away. You know, there are organizations who are very senior people who know the legacy code. So that is an element to look at, but there is no solid answer for that. I agree with you. I think legacy will continue for a reasonable future. You know, I hope all these platforms and hyperscalers come out with fantastic ways of migrating from legacy to new modern technologies. You know.
Right.
Well, with that, Vishal, you know, I think we covered three broad topics. We looked at the technology landscape. Then we looked at cloud and on-prem. Then we looked at this particular legacy versus greenfield. And for the audience, you know, we will be, Vishal and I will go into two newer topics, which are, I'm definitely going to pick his brain on the modern app development areas. We'll spend some time. And then we'll definitely end with looking ahead, what's in the future. So, that 2 sessions will be a follow-up. It will come up soon, and we will be launching it. Thank you. Welcome back, audience, and I'm glad you're listening to the podcast. And it was the podcast I did with my best friend and a person I look forward to listening new thoughts, ideas, and a phenomenal advisor to me and Amadeus as a company over the interactions of what we do here. So Vishal and I spoke about a couple of topics in the last podcast. If I recall, you would have seen we spoke about technology evolutions, followed by on-prem versus cloud. Then we even touched our thoughts about this legacy or the old mainframes, how long it will be, or will it continue for long? What are the questions people should ask? With that, Vishal, welcome back. Thank you for joining the podcast again, and I'm glad you gave me some time to look and talk about 2 new topics, which I told the audience in the last podcast that they should look forward to. So we will jump to the new areas, Vishal. The 2 areas we will look at today is, as I said in the podcast, is modern app development. How do engineers should develop it, and then what is in the future. So Vishal, thank you for joining again. And why don't we start with the modern app applications and development? Let me put it this way. When people use the word modern application development, if I asked you the question in 2010, what would have been your answer? Now in 2025, I'm asking the same question. What will be your thoughts?
Good morning, Madhu. It's a pleasure to be back. I had a great time at our last conversation and excited to continue. So thanks again for having me. To answer your question, modern application development, and again, I love the whole year marker that you gave me. So 10 years ago for me was 2015. And in my mind, application development was basically, writing clean code with automated tests and faster deployments, right? Continuous integration, continuous deployments, the CI/CD pipelines were cool and were fairly mature at the time. And we were learning to be agile in our development activities. I had learned agile at Boeing in 2010, but by 2015, I think we were all fairly mature and learning agile in most companies that I was speaking with at the time. Fast forward to today, 2025, today, most, if not all, technologists speak agile. At Prudential, for example, we've evolved to something called new ways of working, NWAO, the NWAO methods, and added more structure to our development processes, which is something I enjoy a lot, being a structured person, as in our offline conversations. And maybe we've added too much in terms of ceremonies, but we'll save that for, again, another episode,
Another
another
time,
time, right? So in my view, the modern application development is basically understanding the customer needs and something I call continuously iterating to find the right solution. One of my favorite mentors at Prudential used to say, "We can all get better." I think there's a growth mindset embedded in my answer there, that the modern application development concept needs to keep the customer need in mind, but also be ready to iterate because we're never going to have the perfect solution, and we have to keep getting better with time because customer needs will change, customer requirements may change, customer sentiments may change. So that is my kind of wrapped answer for modern app development.
I love it. I think, I haven't heard this from anybody. New ways of working. Fantastic. When you said that, suddenly it popped up in my head that I should ask you this question. Now, engineering, CI/CD pipelines, coding, everything is going on, and we always make things better, do it for the best. Now, with this, maybe of late, AI or generative AI was there, I know that we have a looking ahead session, but I just want to sneak in one question now. With this rise of AI-assisted coding, you know, or quote-unquote low-code platforms, that means you don't have to code, but you can solve your problem. Or even if you want to code, there are others who will code it for you. So these two are, I take it as interrelated, you know, for an end purpose to achieve. If you want to code, hey, you don't code. Somebody else is doing it for you, AI-assisted coding. And low-code platform says, oh, solve a problem. You don't need to code. You know, we'll do it ourselves. What will happen to the traditional software engineering teams? I meant traditional means people like you and I who grew from the world of engineering coding. What do you think, Vishal?
It's actually one of my favorite questions that I anticipated you asking, and it's actually been, it's one that's been playing my mind recently, Madhu, you know, as I kind of hit the 27-year mark, right, in IT.
Yep.
I'm almost like more than almost half my life. Again, we won't go there. So, you know, in the 90s, I learned assembly language programming, where we're basically talking to computer chips in bits and bytes. You know, we had hex byte codes, right? And again, trying to keep it interesting for our listeners here. We then learned more high-level programming languages like C, C++, which were basically compiled and executed on those same chips, right? So we've gone from assembly language to a higher-level programming language that is running on those same chips that we spoke to early in the 90s. Then came a beautiful language named Ruby, where you could write code in fewer lines. I remember our Ruby methods had less than 10 lines of code, we used to take pride in saying, right? And we were building modern day applications. And then in came Rails, basically icing on the cake, where you could take these same Ruby apps to the web. So there's your pattern, right? With AI and low code, that there'll always be new tools and new technologies, but I feel like we're headed towards having more people using these technologies to solve a particular problem. Notice how I'm not saying developers, I'm not saying application, I'm saying people, anyone, non-developers. Non-developers can be writing code and they can solve their problem. Back to you.
I love it. I think, you know, when driverless cars can run, why not coding less thinkers can code, you know?
right.
Anyway, I love it. And I was thinking about one when you related to assembly to C, C++, you used a word high-level programming. I was thinking, hopefully we never used highest-level thinking programming.
Right.
Interesting. I think everything is, I love it. I think we will expand on this in the next session, but I like the answer. Like the answer, you know, not engineers, but people will do solve problems. How powerful it can be, you know. Very good. And when that is happening, Vishal, you know, my next question has been, you know, if I put off this, then what will be a modern developer means? You know, what does he need to know? You know, if he doesn't have to code, if he doesn't have to do, what do you think a modern developer is and he should know?
It's actually a good segue, you know, from our previous conversation. By the way, I'd love to brainstorm more even offline on the above answer, because I'm actually thinking about writing about it and sharing that vision with the world, you know, maybe on LinkedIn.
You should.
Someday. So we should talk more about that on offline, because I'm looking for, you know, perspectives from other leaders. Okay, so modern developer, or how the role has evolved. I think today's developers, and maybe I should just call them technologists as a broader term, need to understand two things. First comes the business. One of my favorite leaders at Pru used to say, Vishal, we're not here to build our resumes. You know, this is enterprise software. So I'm glad I kind of learned that early on as I became a leader. And because it has really helped me build customer-centric applications, you know, with the idea of, I think we touched upon this in the first episode, the cross-functional product, technology, business teams, right? The triangle of trust analogy that you really liked.
Yep.
I think that they need to understand that. Secondly, I'll tie it up to the previous answer. You know, we talked about assembly to C to Ruby to Rails. I think the modern developer needs to understand these tools that are available to them. So at Boeing, one of my buddies and I, you know, we used to think about ourselves as chefs. You know, we've got all these tools and libraries and gems that we can use and build powerful applications. You're no different than a kitchen chef, you know, mixing spices, different oils. If you're a health nut like me, you know, stay away from the butter. Again, I digress. But the modern developer needs to understand how to use these tools responsibly to build their applications and solve that customer need. So again, two-part answer, business need and using the right technologies for the right problem.
I agree with you. I think choosing is a great word. You know, rather than doing, pick the best. Yeah, that is the modern right. developer's need. I'm sure, you know, our podcast, Vishal, I must say, has been viewed by Sindhu, my co-host, was mentioning a couple of times that it's been listened by senior executives, of course, because, you know, people like you are coming into the call. But there is a larger portion of engineering teams are listening to. That's how Sindhu was mentioning last time. So I'm glad I asked this and you answered these kind of questions for the modern minds to think. Very good. And with that, you know, before I jump to looking ahead, you know, one, I don't want to introduce a term which we never spoke about, but something which people use always, future-proof, you know. Do you want to say, what do you think about the word future-proof? Technologists use it all the time.
Right. It's a really simple answer, and maybe because I tend to think a little more black and white in some cases, nothing is future-proof. Mm-hmm. I think we touched them on this last, during the last episode, that even those 30-year-old, what we are calling legacy today, you know, the large databases, Oracle databases, the powerhouses, or, you know, the applications that actually ran on IBM mainframes. I'm quoting some large companies with because mm-hmm. of the respect I have for them. They were considered state of the art at some point. So I don't think anything we're building is future proof. I think everything we build today, 20, 25, hey, maybe as soon as even 10 years down the line, will become legacy at some point. So as technologists, both from a developer standpoint and an executive standpoint, for people like you and me, I think we need to have that mindset that we need to be open to change and evolution.
Excellent. Excellent. Love it. Love it. Nothing is future-proof. I like how you simplified it, Vishal. Okay. With that, you know, for the audience, I thought we will spend some time on the future. What do we predict? How do we think? What do you think about the future holds for all of us, audiences, and what's your predictions? So on looking ahead, you know, Vishal, this is a place I jotted down a couple of questions for you. Okay, this is a pre-recorded questions. Okay. So I'm not making you feel pressure, okay?
Sounds good.
Let me ask you this. If you had to make bold prediction about technology landscape, let's predict for 10 years from now. Let's say 2035. What would it be?
You have to give me a second to think this through. I'm trying to see which Terminator movie I would pick. You know, I don't know if you saw it, Madhu, but I really like the last one. I think they called it Dark Fate, mm-hmm. where they have this new model. Allow me to digress. I'm a movie fan. The yep. The Rev 9, you remember that one? Where yep. you basically split, you know, it's split into its endoskeleton, you know, the metal endoskeleton that it has, and the yep. shape-shifting liquid metal. I love that. So I think that's where we're headed. I'm just kidding. my bold prediction, you know, you said 10 years from now. Okay, so I'm thinking 2035.
Yep.
Okay, hopefully I'll also be 1 year away from retiring. Again, I digress. Let's see. At the rate we're headed.
And Vishal, right there, before you go further, I don't mind telling you why did I say 2035. Some of the audiences, you know, some of the listeners and my colleagues at Amadeus. They
Right.
all know that when I started the firm in 2019, the first thing I showed to everybody was Vision 2035. And
Wow,
I don't
beautiful.
mind, saying that. It's definitely a digression, but that's why when I was thinking about this question, I thought, the 2035 number came. That's exactly because of memory, so.
Beautiful, beautiful. So let me tell you my prediction, and I'm happy to be proven wrong, right? These are just predictions or guesses. You know, I feel like the rate we're headed, Madhu, instead of typing on keyboards, most of us will be, you know, talking to computers or machines and telling them what to do, assuming the humans are still in control, of course, assuming the Terminator Dark Fate hasn't taken over. So as an example, you know, today we talk to Siri and Siri can help us look up temperatures for us on the phone or things like that. I think that's, we're headed to a world where, again, possibly prediction, right? Where we could ask Siri, I'm just using Siri as an example because I'm also an Apple fan, where they could help write a software application, you know, to process my credit card statements, show me how I'm spending my money across different categories, like, say, your home mortgage, your auto loans, your food, your groceries, etc. And the above example that I gave is actually a time, you know, I used to use Excel. You know, I'm dating myself here. I used Excel to track monthly expenses, you know, from my credit card statements. This was before the Mint expense tracker was launched in 2007. So in 2007, I'm using Excel. I have an Excel program or a spreadsheet, and I have a credit card statement as a PDF, and I'm doing this manually. But the world had already evolved to using Mint, and they were automating, you know, your credit card statement and could categorize where you spent your money. So just like that happened in 2007, I'm predicting that by 2035, the most commoners like us, technologists, you know, people, non-technologists, will be basically talking to these machines and telling them what to do.
Excellent, excellent. I love it. I think, because when you started your answer, you said most of us will talk. And you also, I think, used the word that assuming humans still are in control.
Right.
I'm telling you, I think the fear of AI, I don't want to use, terms from Elon or all the people who are in this modern world putting an enormous amount of money into medicine, humanoids, and today, it's coincidentally yesterday I saw him with our American president in Eastern countries talking about humanoids and the powers. He also mentioned a word which was saying that hopefully humans still control the humanoids, and I like that. Very casual word you put, assuming humans are in still control.
Right.
Okay, and I wish so
Every
too.
answer has
2035, I want to be in control of what I own. Maybe I'll own a couple of humanoids. Who knows?
right.
Very well said. Very well said. Now, with that, one last question before I come to your final thoughts. We talked about 10 years, 2035, where the trend is. What do you think? Your questions, your humanoids, your controls, human, completely verbal, like the vibe. What if I ask you a technology or a trend which is there today, last 2, 3 years, but it's not fully talked about, but you believe that will be a big, big thing for the next 10 years? Something which you see in your day-to-day life, which is happening, but you always wonder why people are not talking about it. Something which is, I call it as underestimated talent, either a trend or a technology today, 2025, which you think will be very, very important in 2035. What do you
Right,
think?
right. I'll, actually, you used your question has or. I heard or, but I'll give you one of each, Madhu.
Okay,
So
excellent.
thinking back, let's talk technology. You know, at Lucent reminds me of someone used to say, of course, they were kidding, if there are constants, you know, we had in the code in C and C++, you have the idea of a constant, like say a number 5, and we call it a constant. Someone used to say, if there are constants, why do we keep changing them? You know, he was kidding, Madhu, but it actually brought to surface a much deeper concept. That is the ability to pivot.
Yep.
So I think from a technology standpoint, the ability to pivot is, in my view, again, from where I see the world, is underestimated, right? The second thing, I think, and I guess that sort of segues to the same thought, the pivot thought, if you take it to the next level, I believe the can-do attitude over technical skills. I still see, as a leader myself, I still see hiring leaders looking for the exact fit in their candidates when they're interviewing, right? And again, in my opinion, they may be missing out on some amazing talent out there. And I really hope to see this trend more towards selecting people who can get the job done. So it's a two-part answer. There's the technology, we talked about the ability to pivot, and secondly, attitude over technical skills.
I completely agree with you. I think you really summarized it from an attitude can do. It's very important. Extremely happy you and I chatted on this. Now with that, for the audience and for me and Vishal, it was a fantastic two sessions. Before I close the session, any advice to organizations? Any one single thought comes to your mind?
It's a really good way to end our discussion today. I'm kind of bummed we're coming to a close here, Madhu. This has been so much fun. And advice is always appreciated. So two things come to mind, bearing in mind that we have a variety of listeners, experienced juniors, and I'm happy to continue the conversations.
We
So
will.
two good takeaways that I'd leave our listeners with. One, have an open mind. And I'm actually guilty of this myself. I tend to be fixated, and sometimes I don't look left or I don't look right, but I'm learning that having an open mind actually helps. Keep learning new technologies, learn the business, and keep getting better at whatever you do, one day at a time, because you're not going to build, Rome wasn't built in a day. So be kind to yourself and iterate and try to get better at whatever you do one day at a time. So that's first takeaway. The second is a little more non-technical, and allow me to get on a soapbox for a bit, Madhu, because you gave me the stage. Separate work from home. I still don't see enough of this. Some call it work-life integration. I hate that word. It's not an integration. They are separate. Please separate your work from your home.
Absolutely.
Spend quality time with your family and friends. And then lastly, I'm going to end with focus on your health and fitness. Fitness can be in different forms. There's physical fitness, there's mental. And remember, you only get one body. That's my parting word. One body.
Oh, I
Take good
love
care
it.
of
Love.
it.
Take care of it. There was I love that way you ended it. There were two quotes. I remember someone said, "When you're young, you take care of the body. When you're old, the body will take care of you." I don't know who said this. I think
Love
it's probably a medicine friend of mine. We were chatting, and suddenly he said, "In our young age, we take our body for granted. And when we are old, oh my God, you don't have time to take care of it." And there are so I love the way you said it, because audiences are, as I said, varied age groups, and I'm sure youngsters will love what you said. Take care of the body, and the mind takes care of itself. Very nice. Thank you, Vishal. It was a fantastic conversation over the two episodes, and I, as you said, I'll be the one reaching out to you again to get your time, talk about it in the future. And for audiences, before I close, Vishal, if they want to reach out to you, I'm assuming you have your LinkedIn, your Twitter handle, and I'll ensure that Sindhu, when she publishes our podcast, the audiences will try to reach out to you. On LinkedIn, Twitter, is there anything else you want to give a snippet where they can reach out?
I think you've captured it well, Madhu. I want to end by saying thank you. It's been an absolute honor and pleasure to speak with you and share some of our perspectives, both of us, with the listeners. So I look forward to keeping in touch. Thank you again.
Thank you, Vishal, and thank you, listeners. Thank you for listening to Cloud Tech Talks at Amadeus, and we will be back with another episode with Vishal. Thank you very much.